Hey, what's up? This is Kevin from Kevin's Barbecue Joints. Welcome to episode 12 of the Kevin's Barbecue Joints podcast. This one's an awesome one. I talked to a longtime friend, Simon Majumdar. You would most notably know him from the Food Network. He is a judge on what I have to assume is every show on the Food Network. No, he's a judge. I don't think he's ever been a judge on the baking, one of those baking shows. But in this episode, we talk about his history. We talk about how he got deeply into the food world. We talk specifically about a meal that saved his life. And that's a really interesting story. All these stories are really interesting that he gives because Simon's a great storyteller. We talk about kosher barbecue. We talk about Korean barbecue. We talk about Filipino food. We talk about the Los Angeles food scene. We talk about his travels all across the United States eating barbecue and eating different food. This is just a jam-packed, great interview. Love talking to Simon. I know you're really going to enjoy this. Please subscribe. I'll be adding at least two of these per week.
Good afternoon. Happy Monday to you.
That was excellent to be here. Yeah, it is. It's nice to be on the same time zone as someone for once.
Were you talking to other people today?
Yeah, you know, recently we've had calls to like Cyprus and then before that, and we were in the Armenia and the Middle East, and having calls back here from that. So, the number of times I've missed calls because I just don't know where I am in terms of the time compared to the other person. So having someone who's actually here.
Well, you travel around a lot for Cyprus. Can I ask really quick, what was that for? Was it a radio station?
Well, that's actually coming up. So we did a really interesting event in April, in Abu Dhabi. And it was a culture and policy summit. So it was really interesting. It was set up by the government there, and it was looking at the role of culture in defining policy.
Okay.
You know, so they brought in lots of amazing artists and opera singers and puppeteers. And I mean, it was about 500 people. It was incredible from all over the world, from India, from, you know, across Africa, South America.
Oh, that's fascinating.
And they had, you know, Madeleine Albright was there talking, and for some reason they invited me, which I found, you know, both flattering but also slightly mystifying. But they asked me to curate a meal while I was there for like 300 people, and I did a spice trail dinner.
Oh.
So we followed this, and I'm doing that at another dinner in San Antonio, just following the spice trail and taking different ingredients and showing how, you know, food travels.
Mm-hmm.
Hot barbecue is a perfect example of that. And then anyway, out of that, a number of other opportunities have come up, you know, the joys of networking. So one of them was to go and do a similar event down in Cyprus, which is somewhere that, you know, has been divided for,
oh, for sure,
nearly 50 years now. Rather beautiful place. And so we're going to go, and it's connected with the Berklee School of Music in Boston. So they've invited us down there to talk to their...
Let's see.
So I'm saying it's all slightly convoluted, but the joy is that we get invited to go to these places all over the world. And, you know, my motto is go everywhere, eat everything. And I spend my time with my wife, you know, we're in our little tiny apartment here. And when I'm not here, I basically just, we put on our backpacks and we go somewhere in the world. It's taken me to, I think, either just over or just under 80 countries and every state. Every state of the union.
I saw that when something I was reading, that you've been to all 50 states.
Yeah, and I did that for my last book. But mm-hmm. I didn't do it in that. I've completed it during that journey.
Gotcha.
But anyway, that's kind of what we do. So like I said, we live in this tiny little apartment in LA. We drive a battered old car. But what that allows us to do is basically every penny we have, we don't have any things. We're not really into things here. We just up sticks and we go and visit whenever we get the opportunity. So we're off one of my... I'm hosting a food cruise in Europe later in the year. Yeah, we're back up to the UK, and then next year we're already planning, you know, wherever it may be.
Do you record any? I know I see photos from your travels, but do you record any of it? Like any kind of...
We do. We were in Spain last year, and we had friends who came, the friend is a TV producer, and so she recorded some, and I'm actually doing some cooking videos with the same woman that we're going to be releasing soon. I can't say too much about that because we're about to sign a contract with a very interesting streaming network, but I'm just not allowed to say too much about it right now. We're going to do something with them. And then just, you know, whenever we get opportunities, people invite us. And then in between, you know, sometimes depending on who you're working for, there's, you know, they pay you or don't pay you, but they pay your travel or whatever, we make a choice. And then I come back to LA and try and fill up the coffers again, and then off we go. You know, but it's a great lifestyle. We're very lucky. We don't have kids. Mm-hmm. We don't have plants. You know, they'd be dead in a week.
No plants. No basil.
You're seeing the one calm spot in our tiny little apartment, because the rest of it, if you've ever read any interviews about Lemmy, his apartment apparently was just this one path through all the boxes of like crazy stuff.
Is that how he had it? I haven't read any interviews.
Oh yeah, he was a collector of odd stuff, like not that he was that way inclined, but he collected Nazi paraphernalia because he liked the design.
I read something about that.
If there's an interview, I think, with Dave Grohl of the Foo Fighters, or maybe even talked at his funeral, where he said he went in and you would follow this little path that is the only thing that existed in this thing apart from one chair that Lemmy sat in, and you basically either stood or sat on a box that he gave you. And our apartment, if I was to turn this around, which I won't, is kind of a little bit like that. It's full of people sending me samples of stuff to try, and ingredients and suitcases that we haven't yet unpacked while we pack another one. Laundry. I mean, it's just... Yeah, well, it's chaos.
Sounds like a little bit of organized chaos.
This is my safe space right here. Normally, never more than about 2 feet from a cup of tea.
That's perfect.
Internet, and here we are in California, and you might as well be trying to contact the dead.
It kind of seems like that.
Anyway, carry on while we still have internet.
Connect. Okay, let's you've carved out an interesting niche, a very strategic niche. But I want to talk about barbecue and meat in general with you. But I do want to know how did you get to where you are now? I read somewhere that you said this is like the second half of your life. Was the first half a completely different career?
Well, I've been through, like I guess everyone, I've been through a number of phases. I was training, went to university to read theology to become an Episcopalian and Anglican priest.
And that didn't happen.
It was pretty obvious. But there's still a fascinating part of my life and stuff that I like to study more from a kind of intellectual than religious reason these days. But then I ended up, almost by accident, I got a job in a bookshop, ended up working for Penguin Books, became a sales rep, sales director, all of those things. Ended up publishing books. So I was in publishing for nearly 20 years. And then about 10 years ago, almost exactly 10 years ago, things started going badly. My mother died. That business I was helping to run was pretty horrible. Things were changing in the publishing business. And I had a nervous breakdown. And I actually got to the point where I was about to jump off the balcony of my apartment. It was very strange. I always remember that. I still have the apartment in London. It's a beautiful apartment in Old Street. And it's over a very famous cemetery where Daniel Defoe and John Bunyan and all these incredible people are buried.
Oh, wow.
And I remember as I was getting ready to jump thinking, well, it's a cemetery, so at least there's no middleman. I always remember.
It's always nice to cut out the middleman.
Yeah, those kind of dark humor things. Anyway, luckily the people in the apartment below me, they were Lebanese. I never got to meet them, but they started cooking. And so I got this kind of waft of food. Now, I've told this story many, many times. People, I hope, sometimes get inspiration from it. But I always say that I became more hungry than suicidal. So I kind of went back in to cook. And I made a red lentil dal, a recipe that's on my website. And we call it in our family, we have done for years, even before this, life-saving dal. It's like our chicken soup.
I have to make that now.
Even though I say so myself, it's beautiful. And I make it at a lot of the dinners I cook. And anyway, while I was cooking that, I found a notebook, and in this thing I'd written all these things I wanted to do when I turned 40.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd listened to one of these Tony Robbins courses, and somebody had given me, and it was all...
Of course.
I joke, because it was very American, and I'm very not American. I am an American now, but you know what I mean.
Yes.
The one thing I did learn from this, and I still do, is I wrote down goals. And so I'd written down a list of things to do, in this case, when I turned 40, and I'd done them all. There were things like have a suit made, Savile Row, run a marathon, have my teeth straightened. I had very kind of crooked. I always say I had very British teeth. They looked like an abandoned cemetery.
That's very eloquent.
But I had straightened. I now have very,
They look fantastic on
very
on
chirpy
Skype.
American teeth. And anyway, but at the bottom, I'd written four words, and those are the words that now are the mantra for my life and my wife's life, which is go everywhere, eat everything.
Okay.
So we did, and I set off. I quit my job the next day.
Wow.
They let me, they were very kind and let me have a much shorter, I should have been on like a 6 month notice period because I was high up in the company. Mm-hmm. And they were just like, you know, give us a month and we know
like
you.
Like tie everything up. And
you know, I thought I would come back to London and get a job in a bar, or, you know, I always say stand on a street corner with a sign saying, we'll drop trow for foie gras.
let's try this because I'm on my phone now.
You started to get a little bit chunked up in when you said you would drop trow for foie gras.
So, yeah. So basically, I set off on that journey with no intention of ever it being a career change. It was really going to be just something I had to do. Mm-hmm. And I had no thought about, you know, I had a little safety net of money saved, but no long-term plan. Most of the money saved went on that journey around the world for Eat My Globe. I went to 31 countries in a year. You know, I picked grapes in South Africa. I walked the roughest parts of the Great Wall of China. I went to tea plantations in Darjeeling.
Wow.
Sorry, I'm just trying to get myself.
That's okay. What year was this? What year was were the trout? What's couple? What 2 years? Or?
This time it was exactly 2007. So I was actually this time 10 years ago. I was heading up from. I was at the beginning of the Trans-Siberian Express. I was just about to get on the Trans-Siberian Express in Ulaanbaatar in Mongolia.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah. So I mean, that was the beginning, and actually one of the first connections. Even though I was a huge fan of American barbecue at this point, and had been to Lockhart and all sorts of places. Mm. One of my first real connections was during that journey where I was invited to be part of a team at the American Royal.
That's what I was going to ask you about that. Is that the Burn Rate Barbecue?
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's my friend's teams. Then I've become part of that family. And that was really my introduction to it, to competitive barbecue. I'd been, like I said, on kind of pilgrimages to Lockhart and Central Grocery and places like that. Central, but never really been part of it. So at the end of that, as I said, I came to LA because I'd met my wife on that journey. Okay. I met her in Brazil. She was on vacation there.
Huh.
And we fell in love. I proposed, and I could write anywhere. So we ended up, you know, me coming to share her life in LA. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, it was harder for her. She's an attorney. And now she basically runs my corporation.
Okay.
So if you say anything nasty about me, I'll set her on you.
That's good. Good to know. She seems really, really nice in the interactions I've had with her.
No, she's lovely and organizes is a kind of a pathological organizer. So which I'm not. So
yeah,
we're a great team. And one of the lovely things now is that if people invite me to do things, I'll often say, well, you know, can my wife come with me? And what, you know, or I'll do a deal where they'll go, we'll fly you first class to X. And I go, well, can we get 2 economy tickets and I'll bring my wife because, you know, the hotel is a hotel room. We can share it. So we end up getting to do a lot of fun things together. And I often judge events by how nicely they treat her because I get, you know, doing what I do, I get treated nicely because mm-hmm. I'm on TV and, you know, all those things that happen. But it's, you can really sum up people by how they treat people, you know, who you work with and friends.
And who you're close to.
Yeah. And so that was it. And then kind of the next, and I, again, when I came over here, I had no idea what I was going to do. Maybe a little bit of freelance writing. Again, I thought maybe I'll end up just working in a restaurant or a bar and, you know, doing. And then 2 days, I met my manager who heard me on the radio talking about my book, Eat My Globe. And he got in touch and said, are you ever in LA? And I said, well, I'm here now. He said, oh, I'd love to chat. So we did. And he kind of put my name out and about. And then 2 days before our wedding, John, my manager, emailed me and said, oh, they want to talk to you about this show called The Next Iron Chef, which is the show where they choose the new Iron Chef, mm-hmm. which I had no idea. I'd kind of vaguely heard of Iron Chef, mm-hmm. but it was not big in the UK, or it wasn't. And they said, we'd kind of like you to come along and have an interview. And I didn't know. I thought it was just as a guest or whatever.
Uh-huh.
And I went off on honeymoon. And then it turned out I got an email saying they want you to be a judge on The Next Iron Chef, which was quite a big gig. I didn't realize. Yeah. Probably just as well because I wasn't worried.
That's better. Or much better.
And then I came back from my honeymoon. They were very good. Got my work visa, all of those things that you needed to do. Mm-hmm. And was married at this point. And suddenly found myself landing in LA from London at 2 o'clock. In fact, from Canada, Ottawa. where I'd picked up my work visa at 2 o'clock in the morning, and then at 7 o'clock I'm on a beach with Alton Brand. That was the beginning of a kind of this crazy second life. Well, not even the beginning of it, I guess. Yeah, and now 200 Food Network shows or whatever later, I guess I do this for a living.
Has it been 200?
Nearly.
Wow.
I think for Food Network and other people, if you go across Best Thing I Ever Ate and
True, yeah.
Kitchen and Iron Chef and Next Iron Chef and Extreme Chef and shows that I've done for other networks, it's been a if it's not there, it's certainly getting pretty close to there.
That's amazing. That's amazing.
So I kind of go, oh, I guess this is what I do now. And it's still, I still expect, you know, that thing that a lot of people have. I still expect someone to come and tap me on the shoulder and go, you know, what are you doing here? I always think I'm there under false pretenses, but I'm going to keep doing it until anyone.
That's a really cool journey, and it obviously could have been extremely tragic. It could have been the story would never have even gone any more forward if it wasn't for that Lebanese meal. Lebanese.
Well, that's why I talk about, and one of the things I do when I travel around the world is I talk about how food can save your life, and it can do it in a nutritional sense, certainly, obviously. And I work with a charity, a non-profit called Convoy of Hope, which feeds kids and does women's empowerment programs all over the world, does a lot of disaster relief in the U.S., you know, when there's hurricanes and stuff. They're based out of Springfield, Missouri.
Excellent. I'll put a link to it in the show notes for sure.
Please do, because they're a wonderful organization.
Okay.
But one of the things that I say is that as well as saving you in that nutritional sense, it can save you in a spiritual sense. Like it brought, you know, that meal, the smell of that food literally saved my life.
That's phenomenal. That's such a great story. It's amazing.
And so for me, it was very, I tell that story now, and I kind of travel around the country a lot. I'm having to switch hands just because.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. I'm sorry. This is uncomfortable for you.
No. Okay. Trust me. If uncomfortable is me having a stiff arm from holding the phone, I'm fine.
Okay. Thank you.
But. We,
when you travel around,
I travel around the world and I tell that story and I cook meals with people. And my wife have this thing that we call, it's a hashtag we put on Twitter called, give us a bed, I'll cook you dinner. And we go all over the country, wherever people invite us. And we've been to military bases and we've been into dairies and we've been to student dorm rooms and we've been to just, you know, people's houses. And we cook for them. And the idea is that we just get to meet lots of different Americans.
Life.
We're all very different. You know, we can have different politics,
of course,
particularly now. But actually, things are a bit crazy right now. But the fundamentals are that we're still the same. You know, it's still people worry about paying their bills and going to school and boys liking girls or boys or girls liking girls and girls. I mean, whatever it is, people worry about the same stuff. And in the end, if you can kind of just sit down with someone. And again, one of the reasons I love barbecue is it's kind of very egalitarian. I always remember sitting in, I think it was Kreitz Market in London.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy at the table, there's two that we kind of at that big communal table. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you know it.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Big communal table. And there's the guy sitting there and we're chatting and he goes, and we'd come over from England with my brother at that point.
Okay.
This is like 2000 or 99, very early, you know, my kind of barbecue. Mm-hmm. Kind of. And it turned out he was the mayor, but next to him was his gardener. And he goes, oh, well, let's go and have some lunch. And they'd both gone to sit in Kreitz and were sitting there with, you know, butcher's paper and a slab of fatty biscuit and an iced tea enjoying barbecue. And I think that's the power of food.
Mm-hmm.
Because,
and not just barbecue, but food in general.
Food in general, but I think barbecue has a particular thing, camaraderie to it, which is one of the things I love. That, you know, if I'm walking around the Royal or any other barbecue competition I've been to, and I'm actually wearing my kosher barbecue T-shirt.
Nice.
I've become, you know, part of the kosher barbecue family as well.
Oh,
that you can't walk up to a booth or a smoker and start chatting without someone either giving you a beer or a rib or a, you know, it's just one of those things. So, yeah, I love that food does that.
Yeah, food does that, and like you said, I think with barbecue, there's a sense of, it's a sense of community, and it's also a sense of family that it's not even you have to know someone for 20, 30 years to have that. It seems like you said, walk up and people seem to want to talk to you, want to talk about barbecue, talk about what they love.
I think they're fascinated by, it's changing now, obviously, because American barbecue is going all over the world. But it's fascinating that when I first started doing it, they would ask, they would go like, they'd hear this English accent and they'd see me on the burn rate team and find that quite amusing. Mm-hmm. Well, now, obviously, you see that a lot more. But I still remember my first visit to the Royal, and they were doing the kind of press trips that they take around the Royal.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy who was organizing it then, a good chap called Chris Wilkin, and he couldn't do it one day. I think his father was ill and he had to run off.
Okay.
And so I got to know him. He's actually on the burn rate team. And he thrust a piece of paper and said, I've got to run off. Will you take the press trip for me? And well, so suddenly all these people turn up from Iowa or wherever. And I didn't know. I knew bugger all about barbecue at this point. So I just started making stuff up.
So I started like, what did you say?
No, so I'm pretty sure this stuff ended up in newspapers all over America. I started telling them that, David Beckham and Victoria, Beckham ended up having barbecue at their wedding in Spain because they particularly love fatty brisket. I said the Queen of England. I made up all kinds of stuff. I won't say the word I was going to use.
No, I know you're going to say.
I made up all kinds of stuff. And then just said goodbye to these people, and they were all making notes. So I'm pretty convinced that somewhere in Boise or somewhere, mm-hmm. someone wrote for a local newspaper about Posh and Beckham loving fatty brisket.
It has been passed on to David Beckham, like on to like generations. Like it'll be passed on that he's a huge fan of fatty brisket, which he should be.
If someone read this, they might have sent him a few slabs, and he's like, what the hell is
this? Why am I getting it? He probably doesn't. Oh, probably lean brisket, I think, for him. I would think.
Yeah, I would think, which I see no point to. lean brisket is like kind of having non-alcoholic whiskey. Just stop it.
I think people look at it like an art. If they could make lean brisket taste good, is sort of people
say. To me, without the fat, it's just a lump of dead protein. You might roadkill.
Yeah, I grew up eating the fat on every steak. I was just, my brother would cut all the fat off, but I'd be like, what are you crying? Crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. At least cook it with it on.
Oh yeah, for sure. At least that.
Even if you don't eat it.
So did you grow up eating a lot of meat as a kid? Was that a part of your family?
It was a mixture because my father's from India, and so
I didn't know that.
So Majumdar is a Bengali name. My father is from Calcutta. Yeah, although he hasn't been.
Okay. Well, that makes sense now.
So I cook and a lot of Indian food and a lot of food from his part of India is a lot of a lot of fish, but a lot of it's vegetarian. Mm-hmm. I think predominantly the population of India is vegetarian.
Oh, yeah.
So a lot of vegetables, but also, my mother's side was Welsh. And so that's lamb, beautiful lamb. And so things like our Sunday lunches, which is a big meal in England where all the family gets together.
A roast dinner?
The roast dinner. That was always a big, big thing. Pork, lamb, beef. And then, obviously, my obsession, we have a family home in Spain. My father's there now.
Oh.
And our family are obsessed with, that country. So I've been going there for years. And then, of course, you have things like
the ham.
You're having the ham. And I've actually been lucky enough to go to the ham, to the farms where they prepare.
I want to go so badly.
And I'm lucky. And I go back there as often as I possibly can. Mm-hmm. To eat ham. I'm probably about 75% ham on America. but I go back as often as I can. So, yes, I've always been quite carnivorous, but I've never been too trenchant either side of the case. Like, I'm quite happy to have, tonight I just don't fancy eating a lot of meat. I ate a big slab of prime rib at the weekend.
I saw that. I was going to talk about that.
And so right now, tonight I'm just going to make some ricotta gnocchi and some brown butter and sage, have a nice glass of red wine, and I'll be perfectly happy with that too. I mean, life, it's all about light and shade, and I think if you just get caught up in one thing, I think the same when I read people go, well, I just eat street food, and then other people go, I just go to fine dining restaurants, and I just go, why?
Yeah,
as long as your budget and your, why not try everything that the world has?
Of course,
within reason, mm-hmm. I'm not going to put a line of something out and do that. Drugs or anything stupid, I never would. But it, like, try the best the world has to offer and share it. That's my view.
No, I think that's a fantastic philosophy. That makes a lot of sense. And it also, it gives you a chance to be more well-rounded in what you eat and in what you experience in life.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think for me, that's part of the reason why, you know, I get to do the shows I do. So I cook, and I cook well, but I call myself a cook, not a chef. I get called chef a lot, I guess, just because I'm on television and I cook and I talk about food. So I get called chef, and sometimes I get grief for that. And I go, well, look, I never claim it.
Mm-hmm.
But if I had to explain to everyone who was kind enough to call, why? Because to me, chef is someone who's worked the line, someone that is worked their way through
the trenches. Yeah.
And to me, that's not what I've done. But I cook, and I cook well, and that's not being immodest. That's one of the things I can do. One of the very few things I do well in this life.
No, it's good to have that. That's an important one to have.
So it's interesting with that you know, I never use the word chef, but I cook well, and I just think go and try everything. And it's one of the reasons that I go all over the world, that I think people and eat food and eat as much as possible, that I get asked to judge on shows, because I can go to someone, well, you've said you've made an okonomiyaki from Hiroshima, and actually you haven't. You've made, you know, a pancake with some stuff on it, but it ain't an okonomiyaki. So I guess that's why I get to do what I do.
Well, it's also, to be honest, you're very diplomatic about it. Like, you talk, you're able to at least explain why something didn't work, but you're also, you give them the encouragement because you know that they did work hard to try to make something presentable.
I always think if it's someone like the Iron Chefs, they've all got such big enough egos. And I mean, they're friends. I don't mean that in a...
No, I know what you're saying.
They're on TV and they've got, you know, mm-hmm. it's big egos of people. And in a sensible way, they've got to be because they're on TV.
And they're also chefs. Chefs have that sort of...
And chefs, they have that confidence. Mm-hmm. So I'm less easygoing on them They can take it. And particularly on Iron Chef, where they're supposed to be operating as the best of the best.
True.
If I'm on another show and it's the younger chefs and that, then I'm not going to beat them up. And also, I think in terms of criticism, you know, when people don't always remember that criticism isn't just going, I don't like this.
I agree.
It's about putting something, you know, you write about barbecue places. It's about putting it in context.
Sure.
I see you're doing this, this, and this. Well, the history of that, I understand. Mm-hmm. I don't think you've remained true to that. I like this new thing that you know, it's trying to explain, because I always go, being a judge isn't going, this is yummy, because who cares? Because they're never going to eat it.
Yeah, unless explaining why. Yes.
It's trying to vicariously explain why a dish works for people who aren't there.
For sure. That makes a lot of sense. And that's where I've seen people do write-ups for restaurants, and they say this is good, this is good, this is good, but they don't necessarily say why, and that lends to that what you said. That makes a lot of sense.
Well, to me, it's just like, you know, we went for a meal on Friday, I think, at a new place, and you know, some of it was good, mm-hmm. some of it was excellent, and some of it was awful, and I said why, you know, and I put mm-hmm. it, and I'm very honest, I put it on Instagram, and I had a couple of people go, well, oh, that's blah, it's retro, and I go, look, you know, I dropped $150 of my own hard earned.
Yeah.
I have every right to be it, but I'm not going to sit there and go, well, you're awful and this restaurant and blah, 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 because that's me.
It's a hurtful one.
I'm just like, this didn't work. And you know what? You're sending out a dish. I think it was like corn fritters or something.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like hockey pucks. And I was like, people are coming in here spending their hard earned money. You don't get to do that.
For sure. That's it.
And I don't care whether it's $5 or $500. You don't get to do that.
I agree.
But if I can tell you, hopefully with some profile that they might take notice of, maybe they'll improve it. Mm-hmm. No one has to.
Yeah, exactly. And you would hope that a restaurant would want to improve or at least stay within that certain context.
Good restaurants do.
Yeah.
Good restaurants do. And I think as long as they're, you know, and it's an interesting relationship between customers and restaurants. You know, you will always get the customer who wants to complain about everything because they just want free food. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I don't need free food. I pay for everything.
Mm-hmm.
I have rules. You know, if I go to a lot of restaurants where people know me and they want to send out some food, I'm always very, if they want to send me a couple of dishes to try,
yeah,
that's great. But I go sometimes go to restaurants where they refuse to send out a bill because they know me and their friends. Mm-hmm. So I always have to walk around with a big wedge of cash and give. I basically give the equivalent to the server. And that way everyone's happy. They've been generous. The server gets a deserved great tip, and you know, and I feel clean. So you have to kind of come up with a strategy that works for you when you're in this business.
Oh yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Actually, I like that strategy a lot. I think that
I'm rambling all over the
place. I love that. No, you're about as tangential as I get. I wanted to go into just really quick back to the American Royal. What was that like? Was that, did you enjoy that? Was a lot of work? Was it different than you imagined it would be? How many years did you do it?
And I still do. I mean, the last 2 years, well, of course, they've moved the date. So last year I couldn't do it because of work.
Okay.
This year I can't do it because of work, because they've moved it to Labor Day, which is, I'm sure there are reasons that they can tell you that they think are worthwhile. But it just means that I'm not going to be able to make it, which is a shame, because it was actually I go up there a few days early. I'm there for 3 or 4 days. And it's one of those times of year where I kind of just switch off. I've had once or twice people reach out and ask me if I do events while I'm there, you know, and I just go, thanks, but no thanks. I'm here with my mates. I'm drinking, you know, they have their big thing, their kegerator. But there's about 13 of us, probably more now on our team. We add orphans to it every year, as it were, okay. Barbecue orphans to it every year, who come around and they become part of the team. And we're not a competition. We enter the competition.
Okay.
But because we have to, but we're really a party team. We won Party of the Year 2 years ago.
Oh, fantastic! Nice.
And, which is because, and the reason was that I had this theory, and I was proved right. We feed 1,000 people, and everyone donates money or brings food for Harvesters for the Homeless, which is a local charity there.
Okay.
And we decided, look, we can either do this, or we could try and be a serious competition team. Mm-hmm. And we said we'd rather raise the money. So that's we made a decision, but. I said, look, we have lots of good beer and whiskey and you know, a little bit, you know, and they had some bad wine for the ladies, and I was just like, this isn't good. And there's one of the things you notice is that all the, you know, the barbecue competitions, particularly some of like the Royal, you know, there's a lot of very, you know, attractive young women walking around. It's very nice. And I was like, none of them ever come onto our booth or our party, and I said, because you've got like bad wine and you've got beer, you know, it's basically full of balding middle-aged Midwesterners who I, you know, my barbecue family. But I said, you know, so we set up a deal. I set up a martini station, a cocktail bar.
Okay.
And we did a thing where we said, give $5 and Simon Majumda from the Food Network will make you a cocktail. And we thought, they were laughing at me, and we set it up and I got all my booze and I got all my bartending stuff out, you know, and I make a decent cocktail. And, all the team were laughing at me. They said, you're going to have like 3 people come in.
Uh-huh.
Well, after I'd shaken like 800 cocktails that night,
wow.
They were like, I guess this will work. So now so the next year, a friend of mine who's on the team actually is a fantastic carpenter and kind of fashioned this bar area. And, and we hired extra bartenders to help me so I could have a break because I was getting...
That is really cool.
That was the winning Party of the Year. So now it's become this standard thing. And they actually, when they gave us the prize, they actually said it's because we had the martini bar. And all the kind of, what hesitates to use the word beautiful people when one talks about barbecue, but the beautiful people were all
around. That's really cool. So then you guys have been doing this then for, you said, since what year? You guys have been doing
it
for a while.
I've been doing it since 2007.
Seven, yeah.
But the team before that has been going on for probably 5 or 6, probably more years before. The original person was, you know, one big green egg and his father.
Yeah.
And then it just grew and grew and grew. And now we have one of the biggest spaces. And it's you know, for
sounds
me,
fun.
It's the best. We sit there. We, you know, we cook loads of barbecue for the event. We, you know, they have their kegerator with local craft beers. We have all kinds of it. Yeah, and then we have, you know, all the usual kind of beers that people drink there. Although it's changed a lot over the last 10 years, you see far more of the craft beers there,
for sure.
Particularly in Kansas City because of Boulevard, who are wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
But what I love is that I get to spend a lot of time walking around, and I've got to know the people at Operation Barbecue. I've got to know, you know, all the family, Bill Gillespie, Danielle from Diva Barbecue.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm sure sort of Tuffy, and you probably see Tuffy, Chris. Yeah. And
I know Chris. I mean, I know some of the big competition guys I don't know as well, just because they're busy and they're doing their thing, but I know them to say hi. But, you know, there's a lot of really, really just good people.
Great
there.
People.
And I love, yeah, and that's, and then, you know, I, in my last book, Fed, White, and Blue, which was about becoming an American citizen, mm-hmm. I kind of traveled around the U.S. to kind of figure out America by meeting as many people as possible. And I went to cook at a competition in Kearney, Nebraska, in minus whatever weather,
okay.
with a team from Nebraska called Fat Jacks from Lincoln.
Okay.
Awesome team. And I met them at the Royal and emailed them and said, can I come and hang out with you? And they said, sure. And then I met loads of people up there. There's a guy called Parrothead who is this extraordinary guy. Parrothead is one of the most amazing guys in the business. He's from, I think, North Dakota. And everyone who watches will know or might know Parrothead. I can't remember his full name, but he drives around. And it's just him, his friend. He puts up this beetle kind of almost like a tent you'd have at a tailgate. Sleeps again with his head on his, you know, his charcoal, hides everything, and then they had this joke, and he wins. This guy is one of the most successful competitors in the business, and I love this. You have people who do the science. Sorry, my hands are shaking a bit with holding this.
That's okay.
But you have people who hold it, you know, do all this science and do all of this, and then this guy just kind of rumbles in and does.
Yeah, I love that in life.
And they have a one of them said to me at this competition that he won in Kearney, Nebraska. They said, we drive down here, we spend all weekend, we do this. This is how a barbecue competition works. They said, basically, we do all the work, then Parrothead turns up and wins. and I love that about it. You know, I haven't done it. And then, the other thing, I said the T-shirt I'm wearing now, the kosher barbecue, that's mm-hmm. another thing. I got invited. It was ironic, it was back in Kansas, but I was invited by someone who invited me to come and share Sabbath with them.
Wow.
And I wanted to include that so I could write about the Jewish community in America. And they said, oh, while you're here, are you interested in barbecue? And it was a couple, Joseph and Danielle Silver in Overland Park. And they said, are you interested in barbecue? I said, sure, yeah, I love barbecue. I come up for the Royal. And they go, oh, yeah, well, we don't necessarily go to the Royal because, you know, it runs over Sabbath and mm-hmm. everything. And they said, but would you be interested in coming to a kosher barbecue festival? Well, you know, you would never put those things together.
No.
And I went, sure. And so they introduced me to this remarkable man who's just gone down to left Kansas City to go down and open a barbecue restaurant in Florida, a kosher barbecue place in Florida.
Okay, well, I'll have to look that up.
He's called Mendel Siegel. He's a Lubavitch rabbi. And wow. He's known as the barbecue rabbi. And so I met this guy who is, you know, very religious, mm-hmm. Jewish chap, but just obsessed with barbecue. Makes his own sauces that are kosher, makes his own rubs. I mean, just a really terrific guy. So I ended up going to host for 3 years. I have, again, can't do it this year, the Kansas City barbecue, kosher barbecue thing, and that's the T-shirt I'm wearing.
And when is it? When is that? Is it September?
It's coming up in early September, okay. I think, this year. And now there's ones I went down to host one in Dallas. There's one
a kosher?
In
all kosher?
Yeah, all kosher. And it's become,
I have to research
it's now
this.
It's now become an accredited subset of the okay. Kansas City Barbecue Association.
Wow.
And so they have, obviously there are different rules because there's no pork, obviously. Yeah. But so the meat is prepared on the Thursday in a communal setting using communal kosher ingredients. Okay. Then they put it all in coolers, and then they celebrate the Sabbath. And then on Saturday, when there are 3 stars in the sky, the rabbi will point out, they can go, right, you can start cooking. But they all cook on the same
smoker,
which I believe which are certified kosher, and they go from place to place, and they're shipped around. And
so
they have my pronunciation is horrible, so I apologize to anyone who's watching who... Mushkiach, who's the rabbi, goes around and lights all of them, has to light it by mm-hmm. tradition.
He's the one who, like, he'll lock up a deli from Friday
yeah.
till Saturday. Yeah, like.
And that's so, and then they'll have people going around making sure that they're not doing anything that's not kosher.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. then what's funny is once it starts, once they go, right, go get cooking, it's like any other barbecue. You know, the beers are open. It's like any other barbecue competition you've had. And they're great fun, and the people are. What's really interesting is over the last few years, you know, the very first time I went, I was like, oh, well, this is not bad given the limitations of kosher meat. Well, you know, the limitations is the wrong word, the differences of kosher meat, and it's more salty and other things. And then over the last few years, you go, this is just good barbecue.
Wow. That's incredible. So, and I know brisket's part of the Jewish community already. It's cooked in a different manner, but it's.
But they know, and then they do turkey. So it will be brisket, beef ribs, chicken, and turkey.
I have to go. Is there one in lot? There's not one in California, right?
There is one in California. I haven't had a chance. I'm not sure where it is. I'll have to dig it out. Yeah, but if you get a chance to go, do, because I think.
I would love to.
What I love is that the barbecue community has kind of just sucked that, accepted that and sucked it in as a subset. They're not frightened by it, you know, thought that this was different. They've just really worked. But what it needed was someone like Mendel. And go look up a picture of him.
I will.
There's a great picture of him in, you know, his rabbinic kind of regalia, and then he's standing in front of his smoker with his knives. And he's passionate about barbecue as any human being I've ever.
I'm going to search him out. Maybe I can do an interview with him. He sounds fascinating.
Oh, you would love him. If you want me to put you in touch.
Please do, yeah, please.
He's one of the good guys.
That's great. Well, we've been talking for a while. I kind of wanted to really just quickly kind of go over barbecue styles. Is there any type that you lean towards, or are you open to all? Do you love Kansas City style more than North Carolina style, Texas, or is there kind of how you like food in general? You're just
I think it's, you know, my reaction is the same that I have towards food generally. Why would I go, I only want to eat this style? Yeah. You know, when I'm in North Carolina and I love those, you know, the vinegar sauces, and I love all that. When I'm in Georgia and I haven't had a good one yet, but I did last time I was up in Columbus, Georgia over the 4th of July cooking for some people. They brought in barbecue and I had the most amazing Brunswick stew.
Oh, I love Brunswick.
Why would you not have that if you can have a good one? I like, you know, mocked ribs if I'm in Memphis, even in places that are pretty touristy, like the Rendezvous?
Rendezvous, yeah.
You do those lamb ribs. They're incredible.
Yeah, lamb rib, mutton, and yeah.
Oh, and if I'm in, you know, one of the best things I've ever eaten of anything was in Arkansas. There's a in Marion, Arkansas. There's a place I can't even remember. Jones, I think it's called.
Okay.
This place is really a tiny little barbecue shack, but it won a James Beard, and I don't think the guy even kind of realized, what a big thing that was. Anyway, we went down there. Someone had recommended it to us. We were driving from Little Rock, Arkansas to Mississippi. And so we ended up driving through there, and they just closed. So I said, well, let me at least go around the back and have a look at this smoky. Uh-huh. I'm fascinated.
Yeah.
So I head around the back. He was there, and he goes, oh, I'm sorry, we're just closed. He goes, but I've got 3 pounds of pulled pork left. You can have it. You know, so I gave him a few quid for it. And we took it away in a little foil tray, went into the local dollar store, which is, I think, the only other shop in Mariana. And we sat in and I bought some forks and some paper plates, and we sat and we ate 3 pounds of this pulled pork. And it is the best of, not just of barbecue, the best of anything I've ever eaten.
Really?
And it was incredible. It's just called Jones's. I think it's called Jones's Mariana.
Okay.
Anyway, go if you get a chance, you have to check it out. But at the same time, you know, there are a few things better than sitting and having a hot link at Schmitty's or a slab of brisket at Price's or a beef rib at, you know, Schmitty's or whatever, or Black's,
or Black's,
whatever
or,
it is. I love Black's. I mean, I think of all of them. I mean, that's probably the one that I might get the least conversation about, but I like the most.
Mm-hmm.
And, and then there's the new guys. There's people doing, obviously everyone talks about Franklin, but it's great.
Mm-hmm.
Although I'm allowed to say I preferred Louis Mueller's brisket when I was there.
You're allowed to say anything.
And I didn't have to stand in line as long. Mm-hmm. There's a guy who's a great guy from Kansas who's opened up one of the best barbecue places in the country in Hartford, Connecticut. A guy called Jamie the Bear McDonald.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Bocas. And Jamie's just fantastic and really, really, really cares about his barbecue. But he's doing it. It's turned into a huge success. I think he's got like 3 places now. a taco joint and all kinds of stuff he's doing. And the guy really cares about what he's doing. So to me, yeah, there's so many different styles. Why would I just...
No, I think that's great. There's certain people that say, like, Texas barbecue is my favorite, or this type is my favorite. And I love Texas barbecue, and I love brisket and beef ribs, and I love sausage, but I also love Kansas City style. I like California style, even though we have our own. I love tri-tip.
You know what? There's a place up in Salem, Oregon, that does traditional tri-tip over oak wood, and it's called Adam's Rib, and it's the best ever going to eat. Mm-hmm. And so, I just go to people. Kind of why? I mean, look, I really have maybe a few preferences. I am a big fan of the Texas style. Mm-hmm. I like that kind of salt, pepper, and nothing else.
For sure.
Partly I'm allergic to coffee, so I can't do it. But I'm not into all of this. Let's get funky with the rubs and stuff. I'm pretty straightforward about what I want, because I think if God's done most of the work for you.
Yeah, for sure. Let the ingredients shine, for sure.
Yeah, so we get a lot of the hipster queue, as I call it. But that's true in any area of cooking or writing or any endeavor. You often get young people who are filled with more enthusiasm than their expertise, and it takes a few years for it just to filter out.
For sure.
And I think we're seeing that with craft beer right now. We're seeing it with craft distilling. There's some excellent ones, but there's a lot of stuff that, quite frankly, just ain't that good.
Mm-hmm.
But there's nothing evil about it. It's just over enthusiasm.
No, and I'm excited about that. I'm excited that that exists, because there will be those gems that will pop up out of those.
The cream will always come to the top. Yeah. And what's really exciting is now it's spreading. So, you know, back in England, our idea of barbecue was grilling, and we'd do it, you know, on the 2 days a year when it wasn't pouring with rain. Now you're seeing not just good, you know, barbecue teams in England, but you're seeing really good ones.
Mm-hmm.
And there's an event called Grill Stock, which I think, you know, mm-hmm. Ray goes over and judges Dr. Barbecue.
Yeah.
There's real interest in it. People are getting really serious about it. I'm seeing that in Australia, South Africa, where they have great grilling traditions.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, you know, again, why would you just want to concentrate on smoking when you could have stuff like braai in South Africa,
mm-hmm.
which is incredible.
What is that?
So braai, which is probably a horrible pronunciation. Braai is the South African barbecuing.
Okay.
Their idea of the Aussie, you know, barbie,
mm-hmm.
they go, let's go braai. And a braai will be things like boerewors sausages that they make. It could be, there's this thing called skulpikey, which means little pigeon, like it's a little meatball style thing. Their beef is very different, because in some countries like that, like in Argentina, they don't age their beef, so it's eaten fresh.
Oh.
I guess a lot of it came about because of, you know, just the heat.
Yeah.
And so you eat like a big slab of steak in South Africa, it tastes quite different. But again, it's just a different style. There's no right and wrong to it.
No, definitely.
I think we can't get, and I've been guilty of it, so I'm hardly, you know, innocent, but you can get very pedantic about it. And in the end, you just go, did you enjoy it?
Yeah. Did you really like it? Is it something? And if you've been eating it for your entire life, there's certain things that just maybe you and I might not love it as much as someone else, but, you know, it's tradition.
Well, there's one of them is I have this big thing now that I'm on the battle against the American obsession with tenderness. And tenderness is actually a very, very American construct.
Oh, that's interesting.
It came out of a lot of the way that they cut meat and the box cutting and trying to, you know, a lot of what I call the kind of false information, misadvertising. Mm-hmm. So take, for example, you know yourself in barbecue competitions, if your meat is falling off the bone of mm-hmm. a rib, you've opened.
Oh, without a doubt.
So, but the reason that was done, it was advertised by places that were doing, you know, fast food.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And they did it so that people thought that was good for a rib.
Uh-huh.
Because they were cooking so many, they had to hold them, so they overcooked.
Mm-hmm.
So they'd go, oh, the meat falls off the bone. It's a great thing. And so it was basically misadvertising. But people buy into it, because if you hear something often enough,
mm-hmm.
they buy into it.
People still believe that to this day, for sure.
Oh, yeah. And then the other one is, you know, that I have my big argument with. They go, the steak was so soft I could cut it with a knife.
I was going to say that exact same thing, exactly.
Well, as an Argentinian said to me, and he said the F word, he goes, but you could insert that as you will. But he goes, when were you supposed to eat a cow with a spoon? And they actually, in some cultures, they want to chew the meat and then they actually discard it.
Huh.
And they basically see it as an act, of, you know, a vehicle for flavor. So the
that's fascinating.
Yeah, it's fascinating. So a lot of that is to do with trying to sell you the more expensive cuts. Mm-hmm. Like everyone read about filet mignon. Well, I know if you talk to most chefs, same with chicken breast or pork tenderloin, most chefs will go, ugh.
Yeah.
They kind of have them on the menu.
Because they're like, they're one of the stars of the menu for some reason. But
well, that's it. There are kind of people go, well, why don't you have this on there? But if you're kind of in the know, most people I know will have chicken thighs. That's why barbecue competitions have chicken thighs. That's why most people's favorite bit from, you know, pork is the money muscle. Mm-hmm. That's what in barbecue. That's why, you know, if you're doing beef, I want
ribeye.
You know what? You know, I've got a big slab that I'm going to do tomorrow. I'm going to get out some flat meat and make some Korean bulgogi out of it. And I want to chew on that until, you know, I have to get the dental and get all the flavor out. So that's one of my kind of things, is I always try and get people away from these kind of misadvertising.
Yeah, no, it's like, these almost like a myth that has been perpetuated in.
Well, it's all this, you know, the power of advertising, the most, one of the most successful lines ever in advertising. I think it doubled the use of the particular product was, on shampoo, whereas sometime in the 50s, I read about it in a book fairly recently, some marketing executive just came up, wasn't needed, he just came up with the words, wash and repeat. It doubled the use of the product. You don't need it.
No one ever does unless...
He used the word wash and repeat. And the product was almost doubled overnight.
That makes sense. But it also seems like, this day and age, it seems like every product has 20% more, like a little... something at the very top of it that says 20% more. It's like, 20% of what? Well, what's the base?
This is totally tangential, but think about toothpaste. What's the one thing you see them do on the toothpaste? You show it on the toothbrush, and then they do that little flick back at the top. Well, you only need about a pea size of toothpaste for it to work, but, you know, it's just one of those things that they want, because I guarantee you X number of people will do that. And that just guarantees why, you know, no reason on God's earth you need to do a little flick back with your toothpaste. But advertising works, and that's meat falling off the bone, cutting your steak with a spoon. Anyway, sorry.
It's perfect. This is exactly what I wanted. I'm never going to look at toothpaste the same way again, which is
I rant about this stuff.
No, I love it. I love it. Well, I want to wrap it up, but I really quickly, restaurants in LA, is there any meat-based restaurant or anything that you love? Is there a go-to? I know you like Langer's. I remember you had said you like Langer's.
Well, that sandwich at Langer's is truly one of the greats.
I think
the number 18 with, you know, pastrami and coleslaw and Russian dressing. So it is. It's just, you know, and also it has great bread, so they have that proper.
And it comes warm, like it's fresh. And,
So it is just really good.
Steams.
Yeah, I put on my Instagram the other day, pardon me, one of LA's hidden gems, Taylor's in K-Town.
Did you go to the downtown one? Because there's one up, I think, in La Crescenta, maybe, or something?
So I go to the one in Koreatown.
Okay.
It wasn't when it opened, but now is part of Koreatown. Mm-hmm. 8, whatever it is, near Arlington.
Yeah.
And it's an Olsen Archer place, and you go there and you have, you know, they do great steaks, but I always get the prime rib.
Mm-hmm.
I have cream spinach, and I go with a friend who has a very, very good wine cellar, and so we do a deal. I buy dinner, and he brings a bottle of wine that I would never, A, have access to, or B, be able to afford.
Fantastic.
And that's what we did this weekend, and I think he brought a 1964 Bordeaux, so it was like something rather special. And we got to eat it with perfect slab of prime rib, so I love that. I think the Spacca is still really terrific for... Slightly too. I don't go very often because if it's just my wife and myself, it's just too much. The slabs of these steaks are pretty hefty. But, you know, I also love Korean barbecue. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the things that I love about LA. And I find the dining scene here, particularly with a new kind of mid range, and there was not much high end here, but mid range places, it's very kind of hype and herd driven.
Mm-hmm.
They open. You think, oh, that's going to be good. I'll go back there, and 3 weeks later, the chef's left or something.
Yeah, I agree.
And everyone's moved on. But where LA is exceptional and truly world class is it's just its range of ethnic cuisines.
Oh, yeah.
Filipino, Thai, Korean, Japanese, obviously. And so I love going to Koreatown. I love going to
What's a Korean barbecue place that you love to go to, or that you generally go to?
Well, it depends what I'm looking for. But like if you want old school, you go to somewhere like Soup Bowl Jeep,
mm-hmm.
and you come out smelling like smoke for the next few days. There's a one I went to the other day that I've forgotten the name, that specializes in intestines and all kinds of old stuff. I love Parks, but mm-hmm. pork barbecue. I think Parks is the best.
Oh, yeah, so good.
Well, certainly one of mine. And so we have. Some Korean friends, and they like to do it in the traditional way. So you go there first, and then they have two or three meals after that in the evening. So you end up at 2 o'clock in the morning at Obi Bear eating fried chicken.
Oh, I love that.
Or army soup, which is this. I don't think I've ever had. So Korean army soup was basically a soup that was made in Korea after the Americans had left, but they left behind a lot of their supplies. So it was made out of things like spam and ramen noodles and lots of spices.
That sounds so good.
So it's basically made out of all the, and it's basically what guys and ladies go and have when they've had too much to drink at 2 o'clock in the morning, and it helps you sweat it all out before you go off to work the next day.
And it's called Army Soup.
Army Soup. Okay. And it is. It's just fantastic stuff. But Korean food is something I've been to Korea and I've been lucky enough to travel around, but I'm an enthusiastic amateur, not an expert, but if you go with people who really know it. And that's when LA's at its best. I love Filipino food. And we're really seeing an upswing in people enjoying Filipino food.
Yeah, it's slowly becoming bigger.
Well, my wife's Filipino-American, so I've inherited a bunch of beautiful but rather crazy food-obsessed Filipino.
Well, the lechon and the lumpia and the...
Yeah, I think they'd kill a pig when they just turn the page in a diary just to celebrate. I mean, there doesn't seem to be many occasions when they don't think that the death of a pig would be a good thing.
I've been told that I was invited to a Filipino party, and they told me, you need to get there early because all the food will be, all the lechon will be gone if you don't get there early enough.
Certainly all the good bits.
All right. Well, thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it. Sorry it got a little strange at the beginning with the internet connection, but...
Well, I hope just explain to people that the picture's a bit shaky, it's because I'm holding the phone, not DT or anything.
I'll definitely use an introduction, so it'll make a lot of sense. But thank you very much, and like I've always said, we should get together for some barbecue.
I'd love to. And once schedule gets this crazy, let's put a. What I find out is, give me some dates. Let's put one in the diary, and then we've got something to work to. Otherwise, it just gets too crazy.
Okay. Thanks. Have a great day. All right. Take care. Bye.
Bye. Bye.